Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, it's not the right time to give a garland. Chapter 18, text 65, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Well-known verse, I hope you've all memorized it. I hope that all of you have memorized it. Mat manaha bhava mat bhaktaha mat yaji mam namaskuru mam eva eshyasi satyam te pratijane priyaha asi me manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mang namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyante pratijane priyosime. Get another mic for others to chant. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mang namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyante pratijane priyosime. Manmana bhava madbhakto
manmana bhava madbhakto
manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mang namaskar. Madhyaji mang namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyante pratijane priyosime. Gokul Chandra? Gokul Chandra? Kinshan. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mang namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyante pratijane priyosime. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mang namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyante pratijane, 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 ne. Not pratijane, pratijane. Should learn that. Any ladies, Devyung? Manmana bhava madbhakto. Madhyaji mang namaskuru. Mame vaishyasi satyante. Pratijane priyosime. Manmana bhava madbhakto. Madhyaji mang namaskuru. Mame vaishyasi satyante. Pratijane priyosime. Mat. Manaha. Thinking of me. Bhava. Just become. Mat. Bhaktaha. My devotee. Mat. Yaji. My worshipper. Mam. Unto me. Namaskuru. Offer your obeisances. Mam. Unto me. Eva. Certainly. Aishyasi, you will come. Satyam, truly. Te, to you. Pratijane, I promise. Priyaha, dear. Asi, you are. Me, to me. Lord Krishna says to Arjuna, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Purport, the most confidential part of knowledge is that one should act, one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours, he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. This most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna, the very form with two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. There are descriptions of Krishna found in the Brahma Samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi forms as Vishnu, Narayana, Rama, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputram Atra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This verse, the most confidential part of knowledge, is suitable for all circumstances. I specifically chose to speak on it today as there will be an initiation ceremony today. And the purpose of the initiation is, as Srila Prabhupada said, that the purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement is to become very dear to Krishna. as is Arjuna. And then one will get the result. What is the result of becoming very dear to Krishna? Well, Krishna says here one goes to his abode, but there is... You're going to chant japa now? Like to chant japa now? Yeah, then please go outside and chant japa. Yeah. Take them outside and let them chant japa outside. Now it's for hearing here. Now the purpose of this movement, Srila Prabhupada said, is that to become dear to Krishna, like Arjuna. And that is the purpose in itself. And Krishna promises that such a person, Krishna will take such a person to him. So it's very suitable. This initiation is initiation into the process by which we can become very dear to Krishna. So this verse is also very suitable because it concerns a promise. Krishna is making a promise to his devotee. And in initiation, we make a promise to Krishna. Actually, it's a promise to Krishna via the guru. The promise is to chant a minimum of 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra every day and to follow the principles of no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, and no illicit sex. And implicit in that are many other things, but at least these four are stated. We may wonder why such rules. Krishna doesn't say to Arjuna here, are you prepared to follow four regulative principles? He says, always think of me. And Srila Prabhupada comments, following from Krishna's own statement in the previous verse, that this is the most confidential part of knowledge. So maybe what you're saying, well, I could eat meat and drink wine and have illicit sex and gamble and always think of Krishna. Just like we used to find in our... I'm just thinking back to the days of my brahmachari days in England, where you might think that the... you might have thought that one of the principles is no sleeping, because if anyone was caught taking rest in the day, they'd immediately be got up, woken up. And a common response was, I'm thinking of Krishna in my sleep. Or I'm lying here thinking of Krishna. Some excuse, desperate to get some extra sleep. So the point is to always think of Krishna. So why are these rules required? We have to, when we study any verse in Shastra, we have to see it within the context of the whole text and within the whole context of the Vedic literature. So this Bhagavad Gita, it is a yoga Shastra. At the end of every chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't say it, but the generally in the recitation of the Bhagavad Gita, yoga Shastra, Sri Krishna, Arjuna, Sangvade. And so it's a discussion of yoga. And earlier in the Gita, Krishna says, and he says it many times in various ways, but he says it very specifically at the beginning of the sixth chapter, Nahiya sanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kaschana, that no one can become a yogi unless he renounces sense gratification. Is that what Krishna says in that particular verse? It's not exactly that. He says, unless one renounces the desire for sense gratification. This promise today is, we have the word sankalpa. So, nahya sanyasta sankalpa ha. So sankalpa means also the desire. When one takes a sankalpa, just like here in Pushkar, I presume people take sankalpa. So they're expressing it's a vow, and it's for the purpose of a particular desire. So Krishna says that no one can become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. So it's relatively easy to give up meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, and intoxication. But to give up the desire for sense gratification is not so very easy, as we all experience, if we're going to be honest. So that's why the initiation is required, because one cannot become Krishna conscious unless one is free from sinful activities. These meat-eating, gambling, illicit sex, and intoxication, they are sinful activities. The sinful activities, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, famous verse, Yeshang Twantagatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvandva Mohane Mukta Bhajanti Mangyara Vrataha. That a person who is free from sinful activities and performs pious activities and is free from the duality of delusion. There's also why initiation is required to hear. By hearing the message of Godhead, Bhidyate Hridya Grantis Chidyante Sarva Sangshayaha. The knot on the heart. The knot on the heart is the desire for sense gratification. That is pierced. That is broken, and all the misgivings or the wrong idea, misunderstandings about the purpose of life, about who we are, who is God, who is Krishna. These are all destroyed by the process of hearing about Krishna from a bona fide source. So when one is free from the reactions of sinful activities, of performing sinful activities, and one acts piously and is free from the duality of delusion, one becomes a candidate for worshipping Krishna intensely. This manmana bhava, Srila Prabhupada translates this, always think of me, as Krishna himself says several times throughout Gita, ananyas chintayantoma, ananya cheta satatam, and so on. And Krishna is calling for yatantascha dridavrataha, to worship him with a very strong vow. So becoming free from sinful life is required, and we may think, well, why these four rules? Why meat-eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex? This is stated in the Bhagavatam, that these four are particularly stated as being the symbol, the pratik, epitome of sinful life. Abhyartitastata tasmai stanani kalaye dadau dyutang panang striya suna yatra dharmas chaturvidha. These four adharma chaturvidha vidhaha, four kinds of adharma, which can be translated as sinful life. They are dyutam, which is gambling, panam, which means drinking. And as in English, when you say someone has a drinking habit, it doesn't mean drinking water. It means drinking alcohol. Striya simply means woman. But here it particularly refers to illicit connection with women. And suna refers to the animal slaughter. So these four places were, these places where these four activities take place were granted to the personality of Kali for his residence by Parikshit Maharaj. So these are very sinful activities. And Srila Prabhupada once in a conversation with a non-devotee in Geneva in Switzerland, Srila Prabhupada said to him, unless we break these four pillars of sinful life, there is no meaning of meditation or worshipping God. Because the man was talking about meditation. And Srila Prabhupada brought to the point, the man wanted to talk about meditation, but Srila Prabhupada didn't want to talk to him about meditation or worshipping God. First, understand this principle. These four pillars of sinful life. And Srila Prabhupada explained why. He said, you cannot ignite fire and at the same time pour water on it. So sinful life means destruction of spiritual life. Once you begin spiritual life and the other way you begin sinful life, then how will it be? It is counteracted. There is no progress. And then the man in response said, well, there are other sinful activities as well. For example, egoism and jealousy. Very interesting in Buddhism, which is pseudo-Buddhism, you could say, is the... It's not even... Buddhism's bad enough, but then pseudo-Buddhism is practically the substrate of this whole New Age disease that is all over the world, and it's exported from India to America, and like so many things, comes back again in an even worse form than it left India in. So they make a big thing out of egoism, out of the ego. They say even in there, in Buddhism, even worshipping God, or even the concept of God, is just another manifestation of the ego. So their whole idea is to put out the ego, put out one's existence. So this man said, well, there's jealousy, there's egoism. Prabhupada said, first of all, we begin these primary principles, and then others will automatically be stopped. Most Buddhists are meat eaters, ridiculously. So Srila Prabhupada, if we read his letters especially, time and time again, he states to already initiated devotees to chant 16 rounds and follow these four regulative principles. Time and time again, he states, which indicates, and actually it's a fact, that Srila Prabhupada was experiencing that many of his disciples, even after taking their vows, were not following them. Otherwise, why would he have to say it? He didn't tell them time and time again to take prasada. They didn't have problem following that. Well, to take only prasad, that's something else. But again and again, he stressed this. And actually, Srila Prabhupada on some occasions expressed disgust with disciples who take the vow and then they don't follow it. He would say they're not even human beings, because a human being can take a vow, make a promise. If a human being makes a promise, then you expect him to follow it. And if he doesn't follow it, that means he's not even on the level of a human, because animals can't make promises, only humans can. So if a human makes a promise and doesn't follow it, then he's just like an animal. We can see in Vedic culture how much promises were taken seriously. There are many examples. Dasharath promised to Kaikeyi that he would give her a boon when she wanted it. And when she begged the boon was worse than death for him, to banish Ram. But in his mind, of course, Ramayana is demonstrating the Vedic culture that everyone needs to follow to live as a human being and come to the real purpose of the real platform of human life, which is to become a Vaishnava. So we find that Krishna himself, he's not following all the rules, but in Ram Leela we find it's so much stressed. So Dasharath, he could not break that promise. And when Ram was petitioned by everyone in Ayodhya except Kaikeyi and Mantara, to just, especially Lakshman, just, okay, forget this old king and just become the king yourself. But there was no question in Ram's mind of acting in such a way that would break his father's promise. And Ram, when Ram was called in by Dasharath and told, you be the king, he said, all right. The next day he was called in and said, no, you're not going to be the king. You're going to have to go to the king. Oh, all right. Yadricha labha santushto janvatito vimatsaraha. He's showing unaffected. Whatever he gets, he accepts. That's all. Good or so-called good, so-called bad. Bhishma, when he took the vow never to marry to facilitate his father's marriage, because in Vedic culture you can marry more than once, even especially kings, even though Bhishma was quite a grown boy, his father wanted to marry again. So to effect that, Bhishma took the vow never to marry, and immediately the devas in heaven showered flowers on him. You might think after 50 years and you're still doing it, but they immediately showered because he took a vow. And for a kshatriya to take a vow, that's it. There's no question of going back. Even Kamsa, who was living within Vedic culture of sorts, he trusted Vasudev's word. Vasudev said, I'll give you every child that is born, and Kamsa respected that. He believed in Vasudev's promise. And we can just imagine how hard it was for Yudhishthira to tell a lie. Because even though that culture of living according to one's word and being truthful was so much part of the Vedic culture, Yudhishthira in particular was famous for that. More than Krishna, more than Arjuna, particularly famous. His whole reputation was based on that. He had shown his adherence to his word when Bhima, in the gambling arena, he was immediately ready to kill Duryodhana and all his brothers, and Karna and Shakuni, and probably Dhritarashtra also. And several times during their wanderings in the forest, Bhima said, what the hell are we doing? I'm just going to go. Just let me go. I'll kill them all. And Yudhishthira said, no. We've given our word. And then Krishna told him, you have to tell a lie to your guru so that we can kill him. How difficult it was for Yudhishthira. Lying we take as normal. Part of life. Actually, in this Bhagavad Gita, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada says that it's acceptable for a Vaishya businessman to tell a lie. So it may be there, but it's not meant for brahmanas or people who take vows to follow four regulated principles. Recently, I saw just the beginning clip of some YouTube video, which is Pramana, it seems, in the modern age. There was a speaker to... Oh yeah, it was called How to Recognize When Someone is Lying. So it was a woman speaker, and she said, you should be careful because the person sitting on your right side is a liar, the person sitting on your left side is a liar, and the person sitting in between them is a liar also. She said, everyone tells lies. I was thinking, well, actually, I don't think I tell lies. I can't, and the people I'm living with, they don't tell lies. So, but that seems to be the culture among the karmis, that everyone tells lies. Truthfulness is supposed to be the last leg of dharma, but it's a really wobbly leg. Even recently, even in the Western world, in much of the Western world, people would do deals, business deals or whatever. Maybe someone's just selling a second, without going through a dealer, they sell a second-hand car to someone else, and he says, okay, I'll give you $100 now, and I'll pay you $50 for the next 3 months, and they'd settle it with a handshake. That was all that was required. But nowadays, for anything, you have to make, everything has to be put in writing, notarized. No, who can be trusted? So then we may say, well, why are we asking you to make a promise if people aren't to be trusted? Well, there is a period in which it's seen what is the character of the person coming for initiation, and some level of trust is there, although it's seen that many nevertheless don't follow after vowing to do so. And then it may be asked even, well, why do we have vows anyway? Why do you have to vow it? You can in front of the guru and the fire and the Vaishnavas. Why make such a big thing of it? If someone says, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, I am going to do this. Why do we have to make such solemn vows? Why such a big thing? We are vowing to do things which we don't have the propensity to do, we don't have the habit to do, and to give up things which we have the desire to do. There'd be no need to make a vow to give up meat eating if we didn't have the propensity to do so. And actually, it appears that previous to Srila Prabhupada in Vaishnava society in India, when initiation was given, there was no, do you agree to follow the four regulated principles? There was no such thing. It was just understood. Anyone who's going to be initiated, you're going to be a Vaishnava, then you don't do these things. But for Srila Prabhupada, he had to do that because his disciples from the Western countries were raised in a culture where these things are very ordinary. So the vow not to do it is there wouldn't be any need for it unless we had the propensity to do it. We don't vow, for instance, not to commit suicide. We don't vow not to punch 10 people in the face every day. We don't have such a propensity to do it or a habit. These things are allowed by law and by society, so anytime we can do it, we can get away with it. Any one of us right now can go outside and eat meat, and well, you have to go outside Pushkar to do that because meat's not allowed here. But anyone can do it. But the vow, taking a vow very solemnly, that first of all, if we have any proper sense, which one is supposed to have if one's going to be an initiated Vaishnava, we should know that these things, even if I have a propensity for them, they are absolutely detrimental to my real self-interest. And taking the vow means that we have a sense of responsibility, that now I've said this to the Vaishnavas, to the Guru, in the presence of the sacred fire, so I have to do it. And apart from that, there may be also some fear, because if one eats meat generally, that gives a sinful reaction, but even more so if one has vowed not to do so. Of course, many of the people I initiate in India, they never took meat in their life, and they never had any desire for that. Many, less and less each year, because increasingly meat eating is part of the culture in India. But many of the people I initiated, they never ate meat. Maybe when they're at college, they come from a vegetarian family and they just tried it out once or something like that. But they don't have many Indians up to the present day don't have they're not raised in the culture of eating meat or drinking liquor or gambling or illicit sex. That's why previously these vows at the time of initiation, they weren't taken. It was just understood that people were following them anyway. So for pious Indians, following these principles might be easy if they've done it since birth. But one thing we're finding increasingly in the last few years, that even Indians from good families, they're totally victimized by pornography on the internet. It's everywhere. Wherever you go, you could just get your smartphone and click, 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 whatever it is, and there you have it. It's a very, very, very degrading. But we find even devotees, they come to join our movement and they find it very difficult to give up the impressions that they in earlier life they received by seeing so many bad things or doing so many bad things. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur in that essay which is originally delivered as a speech about the Bhagavatam, he said, oh, how difficult it is to give up the wrong ideas which we have imbibed in youth. So he was talking about wrong ideas, what to speak of very sinful and gross impressions. Well, generally, anyway, Indians are pious. That's on a relative scale. If the average Indian today would be considered very impious by the judgment of someone in India 1,000 years ago, but still much more pious than the average non-India. But in some ways they may be more materialistic also, in some ways. At least I don't find in the Western countries that people are so anxious to have a prestigious job and show their educational level. There's no such thing. So on one level, Indians are very materialistic. They're very concerned with prestige, and you have to live in a certain kind of building, have a certain level of education to be considered successful. So either way, whether you're a pious Indian or an impious Mlecha like me, we have a need for initiation and purification from the attachments that keep us from Krishna. What do we have to do to come to the level of always thinking about Krishna? Well, Srila Prabhupada has given some advice here in this purport. One should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, he was very concerned to develop Varnashram projects, community projects in which devotees can all live together in a manner that they can all think of Krishna, help each other to think of Krishna throughout the day. That is especially good for Grihasthas, because for Brahmacharis who are living in the ashram, they have no other activity but activities that are directly connected with Krishna consciousness. But for Grihastha devotees, most of them, they are in a situation whereby most of the time they are in a situation which is unfavorable for them to think about Krishna. And in fact, they have to occupy their minds with things which are not connected with Krishna. Of course, everything's connected with Krishna, but in an indirect way, some things are directly connected, some things are indirectly connected. So if one is, for instance, doing business in a shop, the customer comes, the devotee can't sing bhajans to him. He has to talk, this is the price of the cloth, and it's a good deal, and we'll give you 15% discount, okay, 20%. He has to deal as a businessman. And if you're developing software, you have to put your mind very deeply into, you have to apply your intelligence so that it's not something that you can think. It's such an intense mental activity that you can't think of other things at the same time. You have to fully put your attention there. So this Varnashram communities is an opportunity for Grihasthas to live without the prestige and without the facilities of middle-class Indian life, but always think of Krishna. And those who are stuck in that way of life, which is not conducive for thinking about Krishna, you please do this. When your children are grown up and settled, or at least old enough that they can look after themselves, don't go on working. Leave all those things. And as vanaprastha, husband and wife, be full-time servants of Krishna attached to a temple community or a farm community. Don't go on working if you don't need to. If your children are grown up, then leave all that and come and serve Krishna full time. I'm wondering if I think I should stop now, because I have a lot more to say. I've only gone through the first of 5 pages, so I think I should stop here because time consideration is there. I can continue this topic and you can pick it up on YouTube later, because I'm going into another another phase of the talk here, which will take another hour, probably. And then there's more after that. That's why I know you're going to say 9:30, but I'm saying the next phase I'm going into will take another hour, probably. And there's more after that. Somehow I was in the illusion that I thought I could get through all of this in 1.5 hours, but it's not going to be. So anyway, there's a few words about taking vows, and Krishna willing, I'll continue talking about this in some place, somewhere else. Hare Krishna. Well, I guess I could take one or two questions about this, which I haven't taken questions throughout all of this. It'll probably go on to topics that I intend to speak about. No. Okay, let's leave it then, because let's get moving along. Giving the names itself is going to take at least 2 hours. We have quite a schedule today. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.